A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We are rejecting bad vibes. We are embracing Astros positivity for this, their World Series, the last stand, potentially, against the Baltimore Orioles this weekend. Some people perhaps not believing. From the 713, we got lucky with the White Sox errors. How about the White Sox got scared of the sleeping giant that they were playing?
Yeah, they were just so nervous playing the Astros that they just made rookie mistakes.
I mean, it's got to be intimidating, the possibility as the worst team in baseball of beating the Astros in 2 out of 3. So, yeah, lots of errors happened, but that's because you still got that intimidation factor.
The one from Luis Robert is wild, though. Yeah. He just dropped that pop-up.
It's something that happens from time to time. Yeah, when you go up against scary teams like the Astros used to be, that is very intimidating, right? And the Baltimore Orioles, a very scary team. Pinchay comments on the Twitch, attainable goals for the Astros, beat out the Rangers for the silver boot, advance from there. Nope, this is it.
Lame.
This is it. Give me a sweep of the hottest team in the American League, a team that has won series consecutively against the Braves, the Phillies, and Yankees. Mm-hmm. Sweep, baby.
Remind the people who's the king of the American League this weekend.
We're still the king. Now, the Rangers are technically the defending champions, but they're in third place, and no one really cares about that.
Yeah, Rangers are inappropriate franchise.
Well, there's that, too. They have been completely forgotten this year. It is very interesting that there is zero discourse about the Texas Rangers this season. They are the defending World Series champions. It seems like there's also not a lot of national conversation about how bad the Astros have been.
I think it's because there's not a lot of national conversation about baseball.
That's a fair point.
Like, if you're not Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge or play for the Dodgers or the Yankees, for the most part, like, you're wildly dismissed for the most part. Mm. So that's probably wild. Like, if this was, I'm trying to think of what a good comp for this is in the end. So if this was, we'll stick with the Rangers in that area. If this is the Dallas Mavericks next year, they'll be getting roasted everywhere.
Yeah, they would be.
But baseball just doesn't grab that national attention to focus on any kind of negative vibes. People just don't care.
It's also nationally, like, the standings watch just doesn't start until July. Partially because there are just so many games that nationally they're not going to freak out over everything. It's also the Rangers.
That's it.
That's kind of where it all comes down to. They haven't talked about the Rangers other than last year. When's the last time the Rangers were like a national baseball topic?
But while we're on that side of it, just how the Rangers aren't a national one, I actually wonder if when the pandemic happened, I really wondered just how angry all fan bases across baseball would have been when the Astros came to town.
Oh, it would have been brutal.
I don't think it would have been that bad. I think everyone's talking it up. I don't think it would have been that bad.
I think it would have been pretty gnarly. Because it was still, look, it's just booing and yelling. Like nothing crazy happened. But to me, it just would have been louder and meant more in the moment. Because I thought it was just, by 2021, so much time had passed since everything came out.
Like, yeah.
It just takes the juice out of a lot of it, that unless you're the Yankees, the Dodgers, those teams, the Rangers, the Mariners, the teams that faced the Astros a lot were affected by the Astros, the Red Sox. Like, people just didn't really care, I felt like, anymore, in general.
I'm with you on that.
I feel like a lot of it, it's social media fingers.
Exactly. I think a lot more of it would have been online than actually in the stands. But hey, I guess we'll never know. So Joe found an interesting tweet from Pro Football Focus at which of these teams will win a Super Bowl first? There's a graphic showing the Detroit Lions, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Buffalo Bills. The Dallas Cowboys have already won 5 Super Bowls. They are also in this graphic.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I couldn't really figure out, like, it was, because it should have been, the way they phrased the tweet should have been next.
Yes.
Because it almost feels like they meant to put the Texans there and they put the Cowboys on accident.
That would be
Like,
to be fair, that would be so Texans being overlooked.
Yeah.
Which is much like what we were talking about, where not a lot of people care about the Rangers nationally having a down year. That's kind of where we would have been for the Houston Texans before any season, except this one, where I think that that will be different. If they underachieve, I think they will get crushed.
Yes, for sure. Of this group, the four, the Lions, the Bengals, the Cowboys, the Bills, who wins the Super Bowl next?
Yes.
Lions.
I would agree with you on the Lions, but let's replace the Cowboys here and put the Houston Texans in this conversation.
Lions.
Still Lions over the Texans.
I'm kind of like...
It's Jared Goff, though.
I know, but I think they're going to... I don't know why. I think I'm going to pick the Lions to go to Super Bowl this year.
But they blew it in the NFC Championship game against a better team last year after playing a fantastic first half. I ultimately came out of that game still thinking, yeah, the 49ers are a better team, even with how well Detroit played in the first half of that game.
Part of it's just that... You know, if you look at the Bengals, okay, just even win your division is a daunting task, let alone to come out of the AFC. Same thing with the Bills. You're in the AFC. The Cowboys, no one buys them. So, and that's why I put with the Texans, like they're in that same category as the Bengals and the Bills. You got to go through Patrick Mahomes, and you got to go through Lamar Jackson, and Joe Burrow, and Josh Allen, and CJ Stroud. Just for an AFC team to get to a Super Bowl even is so much harder than what the Lions have to do. They have to beat San Francisco. Like they can – Philly, I don't buy into this year. Dallas, I don't buy into this year. I think both those teams are going to take a step back and fire their coaches by the offseason. So that's why I have the Lions as the next team, I would say.
Jared Goff, I can't.
I understand.
He had a really good season last year. He's played very well in Detroit. It's still Jared Goff. I still look at Jared Goff and I think to myself, he is probably the new Kirk Cousins in that he does everything statistically well. I think he had top five numbers in the league last year. But what is it that he truly does that sets him apart?
He's a really good game manager. That's what he is. Like he is... And that's kind of what Kirk Cousins is, right? It's not the game manager of the early 2000s, the Trent Dilfers of the world, who literally did nothing but just didn't make mistakes. Goff throws the ball down the field and has minimal mistakes at the same time, so he doesn't often cost the Lions a football game.
The difference, game manager could be the term, but it is one that, as Sean said, and as you said, it does have that history where it's essentially not even backhanded. It is a slap to the face.
100%.
Yes. It is, you're a bad quarterback that's somehow on a good team.
I think that Goff is better than that, but I guess I don't really know what I would call it. I heard some people talking on a podcast, and they said that there's the blue chip quarterbacks that can make blue chip throws, and there's the red chip quarterbacks that can occasionally make the blue chip throws.
I don't like red chip.
Yeah, the red chip kind of confused me, too. That's the last thing that I heard where it's like, hey, they're not a game manager. They're better than that. They're clearly better than that. But at the same time, you don't really trust them over the course of a full game to consistently make the kind of plays that you're going to have to make in the playoffs to beat one of the top quarterbacks in the game who you know is going to be able to do that all game long.
Yeah, that's why I still think the game manager thing kind of fits. It's the modern day version of a game manager. What those guys in the past used to be, it's like Kyle Allen. Like they're your third quarterbacks on a roster.
Do we call them the Dalton, like Andy Dalton? When Andy Dalton was at his best, he was probably in this range where maybe 14th, 13th best quarterback, but no one was ever talking about him as a top 10.
Yeah.
Cousins is a fair comparison, but Cousins the last couple of years statistically has been so damn good that I feel like he might have actually played his way out of that area.
Yeah, his problem is he just doesn't win when it matters. Monday Night Football, yeah. Sunday Night Football, any version of prime time, and he loses. So that's what's tough for him. But I would put this list, I would go the Lions.
Of the four teams that that will win the Super Bowl next, which we're putting the Houston Texans in between the Lions, Bengals, Bills, and Texans.
I would go Lions, Texans, Bengals, Bills.
I will say, I want to say Bengals because I really like Joe Burrow, but I can't. If I have the pick between these four right now, to what you said about the Lions' path, it is the easiest. The Bills just keep losing to the Chiefs. Eventually, you would think they have to beat them, but if it only happens in the regular season, maybe it's not. For the sake of being different, I'll say Bills, Lions, Texans, Bengals.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's fair. Yeah, the Bengals I want to put higher. I struggle with them this season going forward. Joe Burrow's not healthy enough. You know, what does post-T. Higgins era look like? What does the post-Joe Mixon era look like for them? Like, I think they have, you have Chase Brown, who I think is going to be a good running back.
Higgins is at least back for this year.
Yeah.
It's after this year, you wonder.
But it's just, so it's
the it's health their last thing. Stand.
It yeah. is their last stand. It's their last dance.
Like Phil Jackson, like the Bulls?
Mm-hmm. It's the Chase Higgins Burrow, the last dance of those of that trio.
What's better, a last dance or a last stand? Probably last dance.
Last dance sounds a lot nicer. Last stand, I think the Alamo.
Last dance, I think of the end, the guy gets the girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever seen Save the Last Dance?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, man, you haven't seen that? It's a great 2001 film, you know, with Julia Stiles and Sean Patrick Thomas.
No, missed that one.
You kids.
What's it about?
Kerry Washington's in it. It's about a last dance, and they have to save it. I haven't seen it either.
Is it like honestly, is
I
it
just
like,
know there's a movie called Save the Last
like
Dance.
Footloose?
Saving no.
Dancing?
No, but it does.
It's like Venom, the last dance?
It does. It features ballet and a black man dating a white woman in 2001. I mean, pushing boundaries, Saving the Last Dance.
Yeah. How did I not watch this movie?
Yeah.
Probably because you're against interracial relationships, Sean.
When
honestly,
I was 5 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
Look, 54% of Rotten Tomatoes is not great.
That's better than The Acolyte.
That's a good point. But The Acolyte's getting canceled for other reasons.
I was wondering, is it actually being canceled, period? No.
We can only hope. Nerdy Star Wars fans are trying to ruin it.
They should.
What were you talking about? Thermopylae? Is that what you're talking about?
Thermopylae, yeah, man.
Is that the same as what the movie 300?
Yeah, how did you not know that?
I couldn't remember if Thermopylae was that moment
else. How am I sharing the room with somebody who has such little respect for the history of the world?
Well, I just put the movie 300 on my list of last dance.
Yeah, when you said
Thermopylae.
When you said the
just making sure.
This you're talking about how whatever the Battle of Thermopylae went. I don't know. Yeah, at one point you said the Spartans said, and I was just like, they said this is Sparta?
No, they didn't. That wasn't at Thermopylae. That was before Thermopylae.
They did lose that fight.
They did. But they gave the Greeks enough time to muster together an army.
Wait, is there a last dance where they don't all die?
I have a beginning with the speech. Like, maybe this is our version. Paul, you are like the president of the Astros.
The president of the Astros?
Like the speech from the president of the United States before
Independence Day?
Yes.
You know what?
Before the world took down the aliens.
I don't want to be the president of the United States during the movie Independence Day. You know why, Joe?
Why?
Because he nukes Houston in that movie. That man should have been assassinated. Where was John Wilkes Booth when you need him?
He dies in the second one.
Whoa, spoiler.
Spoiler alert. He does die in the second one. It's Gallant and Georgie, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This weekend series for the Houston Astros against the Baltimore Orioles, we want it to be the last dance. It could be the last stand. I want to sweep. Let's get pumped for the weekend, baby. And pretty important moment in baseball last night featuring a guy who, man, I can't believe he's not in the Hall of Fame. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
It's the Astros World Series this weekend at Minute Maid Park. Check that. Their first World Series.
Yeah, first World Series.
Against the Baltimore Orioles, who are playing the best baseball that there is. But the Astros, they're going to take at least two or three. And I'm asking for three.
Okay.
I'm demanding three. Will it happen? We'll see. It's going to be very hard for the first career start of Jake Bloss, who has never pitched at the major league level before and legitimately got drafted last year.
Yeah, he's one of three players active from Georgetown. is what it is. He's their highest draft pick ever.
Yeah, Georgetown, F them.
Yeah, not a...
Hate that school.
No, really, not a big fan.
No, Syracuse is our rival in basketball.
Yeah, they were kind of irrelevant to you now, right?
No, we hate them forever.
No, no matter what, it's just always hate.
It's 1:19 p.m. Central Time, and Georgetown still sucks. That is, it's basically insert time, and Georgetown sucks.
All right.
It's weird because it was definitely dated by the time I got to school, and UConn is clearly a team that we should be more concerned about, but they're so much better than Syracuse that who am I to say that that's a rivalry? Anyway, no one cares about that. I don't know if anyone saw the Houston Astros tweet this out yesterday, but to celebrate Juneteenth and the Rickwood Field game in Birmingham, Alabama, that was played yesterday, they highlighted J.C. Hartman, who was the first black player to pitch for the Houston Colt 45s, eventual Houston Astros. He had also pitched for the Kansas City Monarchs of the Negro Leagues. Yesterday, we saw a game between the Giants and Cardinals played at Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama. That's where the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro Leagues played, I believe, from 1924 through 1960. I think they changed their name after 1948. Willie Mays actually began his pro career there in 1948. He passed away, of course, this week. The final Negro League World Series, he was in it in 1948. It was when he and his Black Barons lost to the Homestead Grays. But we saw some interesting things said by some Major League greats yesterday. First, there was Astros consultant Reggie Jackson, who maybe with all of the bad as far as Astros roster construction, you forget. Yeah, that's Mr. October. So Jackson actually began his minor league career in Birmingham and played at Rickwood Field in 1967. Famously, he dealt with a ton of racism while he was in the minor leagues, and he credits them for all of the things that they did, his teammates on the A's, to support him. Here he is talking about that on Fox yesterday with Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, and Derek Jeter.
You think you're a better person. You think you won when you played here and conquered. I said, you know, I would never want to do it again. I walked into restaurants and they would point at me and said, can't eat here. I would go to a hotel and they say, the can't stay here. We went to Charlie Finley's country club for a welcome home dinner and they pointed me out with the N-word. He can't come in here. Finley marched the whole team out. Finally, they let me in there. He said, we're going to go to the diner and eat hamburgers. We'll go where we're wanted. Fortunately, I had a manager in Johnny McNamara that if I couldn't eat in the place, nobody would eat. We'd get food to travel. If I couldn't stay in a hotel, they'd drive to the next hotel and find a place where I could stay. Had it not been for Raleigh Fingers, Johnny McNamara, Dave Duncan, Joe and Sharon Rudy, I slept on their couch 3-4 nights a week for about a month and a half. Finally, they were threatened that they would burn our apartment complex down unless I got out. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. The year I came here, Bull Connor was the sheriff the year before, and they took minor league baseball out of here. Because in 1963, the Klan murdered 4 black girls, children, in 11, 12, 14 years old at a church here and never got indicted. It was, they were from the Klan. Life magazine did a story on them like they were being honored. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. At the same time, had it not been for my white friends, had it not been for a white manager, and Rudy Fingers and Duncan and Lee Myers, I would have never made it. I was too physically violent. I was ready to physically fight some. I'd have got killed here because I'd have beat someone's ass, and you'd have saw me in an oak tree somewhere.
Reggie, I can't even imagine. It's awful you had to go through that, but you know, appreciate you sharing the rawness and the honesty of it with our audience. I mean, really, it's...
We love you, Reggie.
Yeah. Thank you.
Man. Quick history lesson right there.
That's a great history lesson. Thank you. Reggie Jackson telling us all about it, preaching. Wow. That's Unbelievable. The great Reggie Jackson, the Hall of Famer, joining us here, and we've got more to do.
That is Reggie Jackson. I mean, it's crazy to think that within our lifetime, things were that bad. I like to think we're a lot better as a country, as a people, since then. We certainly have our bad moments, but the guys who were playing through that, who were so out in the open, who were facing that kind of vitriol on a daily basis for really, to us now in 2024, what should have been no reason.
Well, and it's like,
it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, you hear the story, and it's you. You feel like that story shouldn't, look, I mean, I'm born in 92. You don't feel like that this is a story that should be being told about the 60s in this country. And honestly, like, I give...
Well, I mean, that was the 60s.
Yeah. I give... This might sound weird, but I give, like, the producers and Fox a lot of credit in that moment for not butchering that. Because there are a lot of television stations and a lot of networks that would hear Reggie Jackson use those words, and they would panic.
Yeah, they didn't censor those, by the way.
Yeah, only when they posted on social media did they.
They didn't even on social media.
Oh, really?
They actually posted it raw on social media. But for those who don't know, he was talking about how he was called the N-word openly while he was in the South playing minor league baseball.
So I appreciate that they let it go and that they let him tell his story. And I give him credit for telling it, too. Like the fact that Alex Rodriguez and those guys are up there with him, and he feels comfortable sharing the story. It's needed. Like, it's where I think people forget where baseball, like how long it took for baseball to get where it needed to be, or sports in general, the world, everything. And so that was nice to hear, just to hear someone be honest, that honest.
It bummed me out. You don't think that Reggie Jackson would have gone through that. And I say that because, you know, you hear about Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier, and you're like, oh yeah, that was it. No, no, it wasn't. I mean, I guess the best moment that we had when it came to baseball and race was when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record, and you have those two guys come out of the stands who are running around third base with Hank Aaron. But I mean, that was a couple of years after what Reggie Jackson was clearly going through, what I imagine the late Willie Mays went through when he first came into the majors. And that Rickwood Field game is something that has taken place the last couple of years where we do remember, I mean, just how bad things were. And the fact that we had an entire group of people that weren't allowed to play a child's game on the basis of their skin is really embarrassing. I do like to think that we're always getting better. We're always working on ourselves as a country. But, you know, to hear that even Reggie Jackson went through stuff like that, annoying. And I was thinking about it just to be funny for a moment from the perspective of, hey, they let him tell the story. Can you imagine if some of the Astros media was hearing, they were like, yeah, Reggie, I mean, you know, that was bad and all, but I mean, Jeff Bagwell. I mean, come on. What do you have to do with Jeff Bagwell here? I know you went through some stuff. We're going through a season where the Astros aren't in first place. What,
just Kevin Burkhardt just going, yeah, great story. One last thing before you go. How difficult was it for you to have to release Jose Abreu and eat the $30 million remaining on his contract?
I was like, he didn't really stick the landing there.
No. So we're glad that didn't happen. I think if that – there was a moment on a Houston radio station a couple of years ago where one of the most prominent names in Houston sports came on, and they, guess what, asked this person about specifically the Texans, but also Deshaun Watson right away. And this person got very disgusted, got up and left in the middle of the interview.
Huh.
One of my favorite moments. Anyway, Barry Bonds, not in the Hall of Fame. How? What? He was asked by this roundtable on Fox Sports how he would fare against famous Negro League pitcher and eventual major leaguer Satchel Paige, who pitched forever. Satchel Paige pitched for like 30 effing years. Here is what Barry Bonds had to say about how he'd do against Satchel Paige.
Tell me right now, on the spot, what would you do against Satchel Paige?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Gone. You lost your mind, Jeter. Gone. Simple. Gone. Read about it on ESPN, Fox, News, whatever else you want to talk about.
Griff.
Got to believe in yourself. If I don't believe in me, who going to believe in me?
That's right.
I'm a drag button.
Derek, you said
I'm drag button.
I'm going to take all those people off the field.
We're going to race
first. I don't care. Gone. Me and you, brother.
I like that. Barry Bonds does not give a bleep and says, yeah, I would have absolutely smoked.
That's Barry. Like, that's part of the reason why he's not in the Hall of Fame is because he's that arrogant. Like, and not that he is. I'm fine with that, but it's why like a lot of media members don't like him and why they chose to keep him out of the Hall of Fame is for this. Because even people were like, look at Ken Griffey Jr., his facial reactions when Barry says this. He looks so annoyed. Yeah, okay. Trying to make a big deal out of nothing in that moment. It was fun. This, you know, funny last night. It reminds me of the they did the Game of the Corn.
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams. That's what I'm looking for. Thank you. They can do these big productions and make baseball feel important with the stories they tell and the way they present the game. They did that thing where they put like an old school TV on the screen and made everything black and white and like only show part of the field to kind of show what it was like to watch baseball back then. They can do all these cool things, but baseball just like always continues to step on itself to grow the game. And I think last night's like seeing Barry up there, it's like I think I saw Landry tweet this a couple weeks ago. It's like they want us to care about baseball, this generation of baseball, but they wiped McGuire, Sosa, and Bonds. Yeah. Like trying to pretend like they didn't exist.
Exactly.
Like well, the reason why we are all baseball fans.
I mean that is the part that is never going to make any sense. Interesting about Satchel Paige. Joe, do you know when he first pitched? Just guess. First year.
1945.
1927. Can you guess when he last pitched?
1961.
65.
Woo!
He pitched in 5 decades. Now, there was a long period between his last stint pitching for a baseball team. I think it was the Kansas City Athletics in 1965. And it was a moment, I think, I want to say like the 1954 or something like that. So I don't know if that was a one-time thing, sort of like with Roger Clemens when he came back to the Sugar Land Skeeters or something. But Satchel Paige, he pitched a lot. He pitched for a very long time.
These used to just be so different. Like the way, like Jake Bloss being brought up today is like a surprise. But we had Larry Durker was on the Bees, and part of the reason we had him on is like this, you know, baseball story and opinions. But he's 18 years old in his first game, and he struck out Willie Mays. Like he was 18 when he debuted in Major League Baseball. Like things just like they operate baseball, so you can used to be able to have these long careers that you just don't really have anymore. But that's such a 1927 to 1965. Damn.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was pitching from 1927, and he got to make his major league debut when essentially he was like 40 in 1948. So there you go. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Astros World Series. It's this weekend against the Baltimore Orioles. Is it the last stand? Is it the last dance? You get to decide. That's on the table the rest of the show. We're keeping you pumped up for this big-time series. And we continue our
World
countdown
series
to the start of the NFL season next. We are 76 days away. I got another old-school football player for you as part of that countdown. And my Lord and Savior makes an appearance. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This morning, I was over in the Heights at O Athletic, 767 North Shepherd's, where you find it there in the Heights, oathletic.com. You can check it out. See all they have to offer, over 100 classes per week, personal training, all the recovery that you need as well. So you have the endless pool, the steam room, the sauna. They do yoga classes. They got outdoor volleyball going on right now. So they have a nice volleyball court right outside in the back that you can play, whether you want to bring friends and use your membership to do it there. You can sign up to play in leagues that they have. O Athletic is a great time. I love going there. It's my favorite gym I've honestly ever been a part of because it has everything I possibly need. Even just as I'm leaving, the coffee I'm drinking today, got it at All Athletic. Got a little protein shake on the way out as well. I can't recommend it enough. It should be the gym. It's the gym for me. It should be the gym for you. Check them out, oathletic.com, 767 North Shepherd in the Heights, and tell them Joe George sent you by.
We're ready for some football, baby. Set,
hush. The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
76 days away from the start of the NFL season. The best number 76 of all time. Lou the Toe Groza, who played tackle and place kicker for the Cleveland Browns, first in the All-America Football Conference, then the National Football League. When he retired after 1967, he was football's career kicking and points leader. Can you guess, Joe George, what his field goal percentage was?
Ooh. I'm going to go 45%.
54.9%. Okay. Can you guess his longest field goal ever?
33 yards.
Come on. 53 yards. Oh. 33. You're hurt. You're hating on Lou the Toe Groza.
The Toe. He has a college football award named after him.
Yeah.
Good point.
He was a surgical technician at Okinawa in World War II.
He disrespected him.
Veteran. Come on.
Mr. Toe, I apologize.
Mr. The Toe.
His career you're might right. have been.
Mr. The Toe, I apologize.
Undrafted out of Ohio State in 1946.
Wasn't that good then?
Shut Whoa. Up, Joe. My God, that's Lou the Toe.
He was older as a draft pick. You know why?
Because he fought for our country.
He'll protect America.
Right. Good point.
And the world.
Anyway, 76 days away. Joe, I saw this from you, a survey that NFL players have taken about an 18-game schedule. 46% were in favor of an 18-game schedule with stipulations. 8% voted yes without stipulations. 18 games is coming at some point. We've all known this for a while. Do you want 18 games?
I don't really, but this does. Like in the ESPN.com story, they start talking about how they're talking to, I think it's a Steelers player. And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's more money. Like, why not? And then one of the veteran players is like, yeah, no, I don't want to do this. That's kind of what it seems like. Is the younger players, the players who are making less money, are going to say, hey, this is just another game check. This is another opportunity for us to make more money. And we're in on this. It's the veteran players where, like, think back to like the last CBA. It's Rodgers. It's JJ. It's Brady. The old crowd of the NFL are all the ones saying no to all these things, and then it all passes. So it's going to happen. We're going to go down to 2 preseason games. We have 18 regular season games. My guess is the stipulations are going to be, you know, an extra bye week.
I would think so.
What this will lead to is what everyone will be able to stop complaining about President's Day or the day after the Super Bowl not being a holiday because it'll be President's Day. It'll be their new schedule.
So, we'll still work.
We'll still be here. We'll get a comp day, though. It's coming.
It's coming.
I don't know if I need it, though, to be honest.
I do. I want it. I would like to have no preseason games. Preseason games make me ill on the inside because I still feel obligated to watch them. 18 games makes a lot more sense, too, than 17. 17 is bizarre. You shouldn't have more road games than home games in a season. And 17 is just an ugly number.
I agree with that. Like, I like 16, personally. I didn't think there was a need. Because some of my concerns with this is the weird stuff we've heard. Where speculation that players would be limited to the amount of games they play in.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, CJ Stroud's healthy for all 18 weeks, but he only plays in 16 games.
Yeah, I wonder if they would actually follow through on that one. I don't think they would. I don't think they would. But we'll see. 18 games, though, does seem like it's a sooner rather than later kind of addition to the NFL.
And it's really just about how what the NFL players want is how quick this happens. What's the bargaining chip for the NFL players?
They have none. There's too many players. That's the big problem. The guys who are at the bottom, they want more game checks. They want more money.
Well, like, what are they going to ask for?
They want,
like,
more jobs.
For it to happen now.
Bigger roster spots. Bigger rosters.
Because I could see this happening in the next 2 years.
Yeah, I could
tell. I don't think they need to wait for it. Like, look, some of these players, man, all they really want is they want the ability to have no more drug tests. It's a fact.
That would help.
So, what can the NFL offer the players? And they go, yeah, we'll do this now. Because there's also a media opt-out coming soon, too, where the NFL can opt out of a lot of its media rights.
Interesting.
And that's when you want to do, you want to opt out of that deal before you put in the 18 games.
Probably
you want to negotiate 18-game season in that media deal.
18-game seasons would mean 18 to 19 weeks of Tom Brady as a Fox broadcaster. Tom Brady was on with Colin Cowherd, who I just saw was talking about how the Commanders are going to allow backwards hats now that Dan Quinn's running the show. Of course, Colin Cowherd talked about backwards hats.
Real progressive.
But Tom Brady was on with Colin Cowherd yesterday, and my God, he's going to be so good on TV.
There were games where I'd go in afterward and think, God, I'm the worst quarterback in the NFL. Like, why would they even want me to play quarterback for this team? And I'm sure I'm going to feel that way here at Fox, where I finish a game and I go, God, I didn't even give them what they wanted. And it's a very challenging thing in your own mind. I've asked a few people, like, how do you know that you did a good job? And I think for me, so much of this is going to come down to the preparation. And did I feel like I was prepared? Did I feel like our crew was prepared? Did I give them the best over the course of the week so that we could give ourselves the best opportunity to be successful for the fans? Because really, the game is the show. We're there to add our take on it and our analysis. But it's also, did we feel like we added to the broadcast? And from my standpoint, I'm going to work as hard as I can in the process of it, as you talked about earlier, to make sure that I do deliver, because I don't want to let anyone down. I don't want to let the people at Foxer down, and I certainly don't want to let the great NFL fans down either.
He's going to be so good.
I think he's going to be very good. I wasn't sure, but after hearing what he's done so far, even just like a little bit in the UFL championship game, he's going to be pretty good. I think he's going to be really harsh.
Good. We need that. I was intrigued listening to him on the UFL broadcast. He was talking a little bit nerdily, and I'm not sure that's necessarily going to translate in the same way that Tony Romo translated very well at first before he started seeming to maybe not put in the same effort that he had before. But Brady, as a man of effort, no one is going to work harder at this job. And yeah, I'm biased, but I think he's going to be really good.
I think he is too, and I'm still disappointed that Greg Olsen's not going to be the number one guy on a team, but that won't last long. He'll be picked up. He has reportedly an opt-out in his contract where if he gets offered the number one job somewhere else, he can just leave. So, but yeah, I didn't think Brady was going to be very good at this, and then I thought the whole not doing it that first year was also weird.
Everyone doubts him. They've always doubted him. Doubted him after the 5th Super Bowl, after the 6th Super Bowl.
After a couple weeks, I'm going to be like, you know what? Fox needs to put Drew Bledsoe back in the booth. Get Drew. Let's replace him with Drew Bledsoe or Jimmy Garoppolo when Jimmy Garoppolo retires.
Yeah, then he'll really be motivated and he'll be the greatest broadcaster of all time.
For one game, Antonio Brown's in the booth with him, and then he leaves at halftime.
Antonio Brown one. I still don't understand how Brady formed a relationship with that guy. It's Galata George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 76 days away from the start of the NFL season. This is the biggest series of the year for the Houston Astros. It is definitely the biggest series the remainder of the first half. We're trying to get as positive, as excited as we possibly can for this weekend series. So if you want to join us in manifesting an Astros sweep, you can. Also, who's a bigger threat to the Houston Texans between these two youngins? We'll discuss next. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
It's Galant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Galant and Joe George.
That one's chopped off the plate. Tough play for Sosa. He makes it. No, not in time because Vaughn didn't make the catch at first base. Lenin Sosa's throw was there in time, but the ball was not caught cleanly. And the Astros take a 4-3 lead.
I'm not sure the Baltimore Orioles are going to do a whole lot of that these next three games against the Houston Astros. But I do remember last year, Joe, that the Baltimore Orioles bullpen did a lot of puking in games against the Astros.
They did.
The supposedly vaunted Orioles bullpen.
Yeah, it was. I like thinking back, it was deemed that before the series. And then I think the Astros kind of unraveled them a little bit. Their closer got hurt either in that Astros series or right afterwards.
I forget, but you're right.
It was like in that same time frame. I think he got hurt in the Astros series after they lit him up a little bit. And that's really when Baltimore like fell apart for what you thought they were going to be versus what it was. So, hey, scoreboard, Astros on top.
I need 2 of 3. I really need a sweep. I need the second sweep. If you want to get the vibes back, I did bring my cat hair colored broom to the studio. YouTube.com/ESPN Houston, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Lots of kitty cat hair on it. But I brought the broom. I'm wearing the Tequila Sunrise jersey. Didn't bring the orange sunglasses. Those are only for celebrations.
Okay.
Didn't bring any champagne. Didn't bring any Pendleton. Thought about putting some Pendleton in my coffee. Didn't. Look, this is a huge weekend. And I feel like if you are a diehard Houston Astros fan, I feel like you got to go to tonight's game. Because whether it's a last stand or a last dance, this is really the last series in the first half of consequence. And with the way things have gone this year, there is a chance that this is the last time that they are within striking distance. They do have a very easy remainder of the first half of the year. But if you can take 2 or 3 against Baltimore, that is some wind in your sails.
You can buy what Dana Brown is selling about cutting the lead in half. We got people making predictions that the Astros will be back to 500 by the All-Star break in the Twitch chat. And wagers being placed on said predictions. But there is a belief, like, if this team's going to turn around, this would be a huge help for that. You don't play a lot of teams that matter. You play Minnesota, which if you're chasing the wild card, will matter. You know, you're, 6.5, I believe it is now, out of the wild card spot. But the first half sets up with a series win this weekend to make a real run and change the narrative about your season right now. Like this is your opportunity to show that you are going to turn it around, that you are going to fix things. Because if they don't, then I just don't believe it anymore. I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear anymore about win streaks and things will be good and cutting leads in half. But like this weekend, it gives you real positive vibes. Real, real positive vibes.
I'm holding up this broom, Joe. Like I'm the Spartans in the movie 300, but yep. The real life Spartans.
The real ones.
In Thermopylae. 300, I mean, a lot of people would think that I would prefer 300 to the actual history of what happened there.
Well, those people don't know you very well.
Well, they think that I like that all these guys, for some reason, weren't wearing armor. Because the Spartans in 300, I mean, it's
oiled up.
They're a little oiled up. It seems like if they had worn armor, they might have been able to hold off the Persians a little longer. I mean, they had shields, but you know, I don't think that man meat, that beefcake, I don't think that was stopping arrows, swords.
Some arrows probably were bouncing off that dude's 8-pack. Just can't even stick him with it; just bounces right off.
There's the hunchback, guy.
Oh, that guy! What was that guy's deal? What was his deal?
He was weird.
What a traitor. Like, what? Being a traitor is going to stop you from being ugly? No. Just he should have killed himself. I'll be honest.
Whoa.
He should have.
I don't think you can say that on the radio.
I can't say that about a fictional character.
A fictional character who would have died 4,000 years ago?
Yeah. I mean,
he was Mike Fires to the Spartans.
Yeah, that guy sucked. And he was ugly. I mean, so what value do you bring to the table?
They did make him real ugly.
That made him real ugly.
Very ugly.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen 300? Part 2 or 3?
Yeah, I have, because Ava Green's in it.
I
strong, powerful, independent woman.
I still haven't watched it yet. Is it any good?
I don't remember any of it, so I'm guessing no.
Okay. How is there a part 2 to that story?
Yeah, because the 300 are gone.
It's like the Alamo too.
It's probably
like,
part of,
I think it's like the next wave that comes and kills all the Persians.
Well, it was a graphic novel. No, there's no next wave. Like they get all the way to Athens, and basically the Greek navy is what ultimately won the day for the Greeks. Like the Persians probably would have overrun them, but Greek navy, specifically the Athenians, took over that time. You know. This is what you would know if you paid attention to history, but instead, Joe George gets his history from a comic book movie.
Yep.
He's not even ashamed of that.
I don't know. I couldn't do it. I bet history.
I don't blame you, dude. I'm just
that's like 5,000 years ago, it's tough to get too in the weeds about it.
Oh, man.
History was the one class in high school, too, where I, and college and stuff, where I.
And before that and after.
Yeah. Where you had to have a really good. If you had a dull professor. In a history class, that made it so much worse.
I would agree with you there.
You really, like you shouldn't be allowed to be a boring person and teach history. And I think it should be a different expectation.
You're looking for a different personality type.
Yeah, you got to bring the energy a little bit.
Joe Espada, not a history teacher?
Yeah, Joe Espada, not a history teacher. Not a history guy.
My first high school history teacher would call kids who misbehave little bleeps. I was a big fan. So that maybe got me in and maybe turned me into a potty mouth. Who knows? Shout out to Mr. Heller. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Who are you more concerned about in 2024? There's an article about Trevor Lawrence who feels that this Jaguars team is the best team that Jacksonville has ever had. You got Anthony Richardson who had a Nate Tice profile about him on Yahoo Sports and is at the top, close to the top. Of Field Yates' list of fantasy football quarterbacks going into 2024 because of his running ability, I would assume. Who are you more threatened by if you're the Houston Texans going into this coming season?
Yeah, I still, after all the negative things we said about Trevor Lawrence when he signed his contract, I think the answer for me is still Trevor Lawrence. Mainly because Anthony Richardson's played in one game in which he played in four quarters. And I think you go back to college and you watch kind of the up and down that he was, where like you have the week one Utah game, Heisman candidate, week two, he's a disaster. I'm still not totally sold on Anthony Richardson, the quarterback, like the thrower of the football. The runner, yes. But I'm not sure he's not Justin Fields still.
He's better than Fields. He's better than Fields.
He never was better than Fields in college. So like that's
yeah,
where
because he was at Florida.
I know.
He was screwed.
I know.
Fields was on essentially the best team.
Yeah.
Every single game,
but
and played against a bunch of unathletic people in the Big Ten.
I think I still lean Trevor Lawrence, but it's not a big gap. Like it's not like Trevor Lawrence is on a scale of 1 to 10, a 10, and Anthony Richardson's a 4. It's close, but I still put Lawrence in front of it a little bit just because we just haven't really seen it from Richardson just yet.
Lawrence clearly has the leg up. I'm so sick though of reading profiles about Lawrence where it talks about the knee injury he dealt with last year, the bad offensive line, the bad skill players. Urban Meyer coached him multiple years ago. He has so many excuses made for him. I think that the gap is fairly close because I think that Richardson's potential is something that would be very concerning if he actually can figure out how to stay healthy. Watching him play in the first couple of games of last year and comparing him to Stroud, but more so comparing him to Bryce Young, the throws that he steps into, he has the ability to do it, and he actually knows how to use the entirety of his athleticism. For whatever reason, Trevor Lawrence seems to forget that he's actually fast and can run and is big, and maybe the knee injury affected him last year, but Lawrence does not know all of the gifts that he has as an athlete. Anthony Richardson, perhaps to his own detriment, clearly does.
And yeah, Steichen talked about that this week.
Yeah. Shane Steichen said, hey, bro, can you stop going crazy, throwing your body out there like Will Levis did at times last season.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me if by the end of the year we have Richardson and Levis in front of Lawrence in terms of quarterbacks you're afraid of in the division, even though Lawrence is going to be the one with the fat contract and making $55 million a year. He has to elevate his game. He probably undeservedly is my answer to this question. Richardson probably deserves to be the answer more because there's more unknown.
I don't know.
In a good way.
I mean, the unknown definitely opens all sorts of possibilities. I would like to put Richardson ahead, too, because I've always been out on Lawrence as God. Because that's what he's always been billed as. And I was like, hey, I watched him in college. I see what you're talking about, but can we stop putting him on this pedestal like the greatest prospect ever? And we're doing it again with Caleb Williams. We never learn. Maybe Williams will be amazing. I don't know. All I know is that generally I push back against the idea that any quarterback coming out of college is definitively the guy. Lawrence has not been, and I think that is one of the reasons I maybe hold it against him and why I have Richardson closer to Lawrence than I probably should. Because I will admit, I'm buying a little bit into some of the Richardson hype.
Yeah.
But I think also he's just unbelievably physically gifted.
I don't think the, you know, using the Lawrence hype, even though he didn't put it on himself, you know, against him is unfair. Same thing with Caleb. Certain quarterbacks are held to different standards. It's just the way it is. Joe Burrow was set to a different standard the way he, you know, played his last year at LSU and when he came into the league. Like, you expect more from him. You expected less from Stroud because he didn't go first overall. He went second. It's stupid. But it's the way that sports work. If you are the first quarterback taken and you are like Lawrence and deemed a generational prospect, we expect you to do generational things. And he does not do those.
Yeah, you can't just be solid at everything guy when you're the generational prospect. Like, that's kind of his, like, Trevor Lawrence. I think that's why there's a disconnect among how a lot of people view him. And, like, the people that really like him are like, yeah, what can he do? Like, look at this. He's doing that. He makes this kind of throw. He makes that kind of throw. And everyone else is like, yeah, but he doesn't pop at anything. Like, it's just solid across the board where there's no, like, oh, this is why it's okay that he turns the ball over too much, because he's doing, like how Josh Allen gets talked about, where, yes, there are some turnovers, but the upside, the big plays are so big. Trevor Lawrence just doesn't have that. So he is in this weird spot of, you go into the game, you're not like, oh God, we got to play against Trevor Lawrence, where Anthony Richardson, week one, because he's more than likely going to be healthy for week one. I'm kind of like, ugh. Don't love playing Anthony Richardson.
Yeah,
saw it last year when they played
two drives, two touchdowns.
Like, to what Sean's saying, if Will Levis, if he turns his career into what Trevor Lawrence is now, we'll be talking about the Titans and how great of a job they did drafting him in the second round and being the team that took a chance on him. And they could have the exact same career, but one was taken in the second and Rome was deemed a generational quarterback.
Less expectations than one.
Perspective matters.
Yeah, you're right. That's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Let's get pumped for this Astros World Series-esque series against the Baltimore Orioles. Ah-ooh! Ah-ooh! You know what would be a good way to get pumped up for the game? Go to the Highway Cantina. Huh? 975 Tall Texan Margaritas to get you lubed up going in there to defend the wall. Could be the last stand. Could be the last dance. Whatever it is, they're going to need your support out there. And I think that's a great way to get out there. Go stop at the Highway Cantina before the game. Have yourself a couple of drinks. Have some of the amazing food. It's better than in the ballpark, that's for damn sure. Wood-fired oysters or just your traditional salsa, your traditional fajitas. The Highway Cantina has it all. It's right smack in the middle of East Downtown on St. Emmanuel Street, right by the baseball stadium, right by the basketball arena, right by the soccer stadium as well. Or maybe you're looking for somewhere to go for a work happy hour in downtown. Maybe you're looking to impress the boss, take somebody out on a date. The Highway Cantina is your one-stop shop for everything awesome in downtown Houston. Check out the Highway Cantina. Highway Cantina. And tell them Paul Gallant sent you by.